Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show as we deal with the boxing news, the interviews, the legend tales, and as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell. You call me the trainer of champions, the Hall of... You dialed the wrong number, Bob. Call me my other line. Yeah, as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. Yeah, we're traveling the world looking for stars, interviews, and things like that. But we will have some special guests today on the show. Some of them are from Louisiana, which is a thing for boxing nowadays that is second to none. In Louisiana, we're just boxing is really taking off in Louisiana. So we will have a special guest from down there. Well, without further ado, as we're taking the world by storm and on a magic barai when they hit the right number, our radio aficionado Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Okay, good. Busy phone lines already.
it looks like you hit the right number.
Too bad it wasn't the big lottery, though, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. But, we got a lot of other things to talk about, but we'll go around the world first because we do want to take that, the magic carpet of Leon J. Mohammed out for a little ride. Let's see how it goes. So, we don't have to go far. We're going to test it out first because we only have to go down to Philly, USA, to the 2300 Arena where the WBC World Light Heavyweight Champion, Alexander Gavazdik, he's 16-0, 13 KOs. This will be his first fight since winning the title against Adonis Stevenson, and he'll defend against challenger B.B. Ngungu. He's 38-8 with 14 KOs. And the undercard is led by the Kudratito Abdukakarov, 15-0, 9 KOs versus Chieta Obala, 20 wins, 3 losses, 1 draw, 18 knockouts at the welterweight class. And also, Philadelphia native, the southpaw Ray Robinson Danu, returns to the ring to battle Edigus Kavioroskis, 24-3 and 17 KOs out of Lithuania. And that show is going to be the one on ESPN tonight. And down the road in Hockenson, Delaware, the show is topped with the super welterweight bout with unbeaten Israel Garcia, 10-0-1, taking on Fabian Maimo, 23-8-2. And a local native, lightweight Joey Tavera Jr., 16-3, fighting Benjamin Bortai, 4-5. Heavyweight Terrell James, he steps in against the 6-0 Johnny Langston in the main event in Atlanta, GA. And flyweight Cerrito Henderson highlights tonight in New Albany, Indiana. It's Emilio Hernandez and Javier Rodriguez vying for the vacant USA Nebraska state welterweight title, and that's the topper in Grand Island, Nebraska. At the Albuquerque, New Mexico, they'll have welterweights Josh Torres, 19-6-2, and Francisco Javier Castro, 28-9, meeting up. Indio, California features the 20-year-old unbeaten flyweight Ryan Garcia. He's 17-0, 14 knockouts. We've talked about this young man before. He's out of California. He's back in action tonight, crossing the ropes with Jose Lopez, 20 wins, 3 losses, and a draw as the headliner there. Nova Scotia native super featherweight Joey Laviolette, 10-2, 6 KOs, takes on Aramis Solis, 14-8, in the feature up in New Glasgow, Nova Scotia, Canada. And now in Calgary, it's Edward Reno versus Anthony Lassard in a middleweight matchup. And to the south now to Rosarito, Baja California, Mexico, where featherweight Diego Ailman, 8-0-1, and Oscar Ibarra, 3-4-1 headline. Salamanca will feature the Jose Alberto Suarez Serrano versus Jose Juan Terrazas, middleweight bout. Longtime champion Daniela Romina Bermudez, 24-3-3. Will defend her WBO World Female Bantamweight crown when she steps in with Irma Garcia, 19-3-1, in the main event in Buenos Aires, Argentina, on Tai Chi Sports TV. In Santa Cruz de la Sierra, Bolivia, featherweight Andy Alvarez and Jose Antonio Rodriguez Chile meet up. It's Andres Campo versus Claudio Lavananza in the bantamweight headliner in Santiago, Chile. Marion Aguas, 10-1, tangles with fellow welterweight Adrian Caro Campos, 7-5-3 at the top of the card in Quito, Ecuador. Victoria, Venezuela, they have 9-0-2 heavyweight Wilmer Vasquez battling Johnny Michelina, 1-1-1 as its feature. On now to Africa, to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, to Kinshasa, where Ilunga Makabu fights for the open WBC silver cruiserweight title. Two undefeated boxers meet for the vacant German International BBB cruiserweight crown when Armin Jojars, 5-0, and Jamal Bosniak, 3-0, crossed the ropes in Nuremberg, Germany. Felix Kreidman, 5-0, and Sardian Antonio Chavini, 4-2, vie for the vacant GBC youth super welterweight belt as the feature in Hal Andersau, Sasha Arnhawk. Hovo Hoff and Lord Ryan Westfallen highlights the middleweight clashes Ihan Nassif and Arian Gassi, and in Gestock Schleswig Holstein, the super middleweight matchup of Sebastiano Lozito, 14-1, and Mazen Gurke, who lost his 100th fight back on February 2nd, put his record now at 15 wins, 100 losses, and 5 draws. Nyon Switzerland hosted Nikos Mohan, 61, and Georgi Arabule, 4-0-1, light heavyweight contest. And Toulon, France, was the undefeated Jose Gomez, 17-0, stepped in with Nahaliel Alberto Galecki for the open IBF International welterweight crown. Salvatore Ritu, 30-3, 10 KOs, defends his Italy cruiserweight belt when he faces Maurizio Lavaglio, 22-16, in the main event in Cesare, Italy. Cervinati and Lombardia were witness Marco Miano stepping in with Luca Capuano in the super middleweight feature. Bilbao, Spain highlights unbeaten welterweight Kerman Lazaraga, 27-0, 22 KOs, defending his EGU European title against David Havanasian, 23-3-1, 11 knockouts. The featherweight clash between Frederick Hede Jensen and Ilya Dorosovili tops tonight in Majoron, Denmark. A big card in Dublin, Ireland tonight, with 8-0 Ed Donovan tangling with the 5-0-1 Stephen McAfee for the vacant BUI Ireland National Featherweight title. That's on Ireland TG4 TV. Two other open BUI titles also on the line there, 6-0 Victor Rabo and 5-1 Jack Henney seek the Celtic super lightweight crown. And it's Alan Faylon and Aidan Metcalf going for the Celtic super Celtic featherweight crown. And a rare Saturday night off at your call in London, UK, with plenty of action elsewhere in the country, starting in Liverpool, where DAZN has the Liam Smith, 26-2-1 versus Sam Eddington, 24-5 bout as a super welterweight main event. And the undercard features Joe Hughes, 17-3-1 versus Robbie Davies, Jr., 17-1, for both the Triple BFC and the EBU European super lightweight titles. It's Philip Bowles, 19-3 versus the 16-1 Tom Farrell for the Commonwealth British Empire super lightweight belt. And 9-0 Anthony Fowler fights the 12-0 Scott Fitzgerald for the open WBA International super welterweight crown. Also heavyweight David Price, 23-6, steps in with Kash Ali, 15-0. In Stoke-on-Trent, Jamal Ledoux and Corey Jackson vie for the vacant BFC Midlands area super middleweight belt. Rotherham will see Jake Sellers and Mickey Ellison vie for the vacant BFC Central area super middleweight belt. Southampton has 14-0 super welterweight Bill Pickford taking on Adam Robiak as its headliner, and Blackburn Lancashire will showcase unbeaten super welterweight Alex McCoy, 11-0-1, stepping in with the 5-5-2 Dan West. Uppsala, Sweden highlights the Valjadur Gutsendotter and Sabina Mashenko female flyweight clash, and lightweight Paris Stavropoulos and Stavea Stefanov go at it in Sofia, Bulgaria. At the Ice Palace in Vladimir, Russia, welterweight Vajanat Kampaznian, 14-4, fights Eric Kapia Bukadi, 22-2-2. Thessaloniki, Greece, features a super welterweight matchup of Fadagiotis Natsagos, 4-1, versus the debuting Faris Husovic. Hey, we have Marwan, India, checking in with the Arun Antil versus Amit Rawa welterweight headliner, and the battle for the vacant WBC ABC silver super lightweight title between Geisler AP and Fiotza Aksana tops the card in Jakarta, Indonesia. Bergamo, Malaysia, hosts the Ezwarin Murali versus Derek Hambali welterweight battle. And the Philippines has a couple of spots going. First in Manila, Robin Langley steps in with Zomar Fiallo in a bantamweight battle. And in Bacolod City, This is Joe from Montana versus Rodel Wintisaro, welterweight clash at the topper there. Shanghai, China, hosts a big card, also with super lightweights by Shangbo Masiyawula, 15-2-1, and Yusuke Kano, 14-4, facing off as the main event. And the undercard features Wulong Tuatazi, 10-3-1, versus Ryoto Yamauchi, 4-0, vying for the vacant WBA International flyweight belt. And so Kimura, 17-2-2, and Wicha Fulakao, 60 wins, 10 losses, 2 draws, 24 knockouts. They both seek the open OPBF silver flyweight belt. And the vacant WBO World Female Light Heavyweight crown will go to the winner of the Giovanna Perez versus Lanny Daniels fight happening in Auckland, New Zealand. On to Australia, to Tweedhead, New South Wales, where reigning WBA Oceania bantamweight king Jason Maloney, 17-1, 14 KOs, defends against Chris Paulino, who's 19-3 with 8 KOs. Condell Park has 3 open WBF titles up, and first we'll have the Mike Yali versus Dylan Bergero for the Australasian welterweight crown, and Colin Mazudier takes on William Parsons for the Australasian super welterweight belt. And the main event has Ty Telford fighting Brent Davis for the silver international welterweight crown. Newstead in Queensland has a couple of title fights as well, with Ben Kite, 13-4-1, and Michael Whitehead, 6-1-1, both seeking the vacant Australian National Boxing Federation, Australian, and WBF Asia-Pacific welterweight crown. And also Australia, Queensland state light heavyweight king Connor Wallace defends against Brunetta. And there we go, Aaron, 28 countries, one more than last week. I tell you, we're going to get 30 sooner or later. Everything's going to come together. All the stars will align and we'll have over 30 countries. But there you go, some good action going on.
Well, there's good action going on. Also, you know, Triple G, Golovkin, has an opponent set for June 8th against Byron Adams. For June 28th. So Golovkin's climbing back in there come up. At the end of the month, you have Crawford and Khan matching up.
Khan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of great matchups that are happening. We can't forget, you know, the heavyweight talk. In June, we have June 1st with
Joshua Miller.
Joshua Miller. In New York City, and he's making his big splash in the United States. So, my God, it's really, really happening, bro. There's a lot of boxing. Man, with this streaming stuff, you've seen boxing come out of the woodwork. But the WBA and the IBF, they have been over in China. They're doing some work, and they gave some belts out, the WBA did, to one of the champions over there. So, the boxing organizations are moving around, getting around the world. They get China happening with 1 billion people, man. Just the TV revenue for streaming, for buys, would be amazing. If somebody could latch on over there in their country, it would set second to none ratings. You know, you in a market like that with over 1 billion people, man, you get 1% buys, and, man, you got a big number, right? But
exactly.
You got some numbers, Bob, to talk about big pay-per-view numbers. You got some numbers from some fights that happened week or so ago.
Yeah,
can you go over that?
We were waiting to see what the totals were going to be for the Spence Garcia fight, the pay-per-view from a couple weeks ago. You know, it's interesting. They're sitting there this week releasing the numbers saying, well, we're not done counting yet, but you know, it's like 2 weeks. So I wonder what's going on there. But anyway, the numbers turned out to be just over 360,000 for that fight a couple weeks ago on the pay-per-view. And like we were talking earlier, but it's not really a bad number for Spence for his first time out.
Yeah, no, with Spence and Garcia, with that matchup, Bob, Spence being, this is his pay-per-view splash, as you want to call it, with Garcia, 360, that's a great number. They did more than the heavyweights.
Right. Yeah.
So at 300 buys at 70, was $75 a hit.
$75, yeah, yeah.
Hey, Spence and Garcia, they made a splash. I think that number is good. It shows that at 300,000 buys, which is a good number for a person just coming into pay-per-view, where it can take off for 360, you know, 300 at one time, you know, HBO, and then if they thought you couldn't do 300,000 buys, they wouldn't even put you on pay-per-view. So with this here, him making that splash on the pay-per-view, 300,000 buys, that's a good number for them, too. And I think Spence is well on his way to becoming a star. I mean, his next outing, if he do 400 and numbers keep going, he moves that needle, I think he's a hit.
Right. That brings up that other point, too. We have those four names popping back up again. You know, Pacquiao, he went into the ring after the Spence fight, agreed to fight. And now he's talking about Thurman, which he kind of puts maybe a Spence-Porter fight in there. And then there's talk like, well, let those two fight and those other two fight and then have the two winners fight. You know, so there's some action going on there, too. Randy Pacquiao chasing everything up, you know, shaking up here. But, you know, we also had some – yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, well, Pacquiao, you know, he's a vet. You know, he has all these titles and all that. He just loves fighting. And hats off to him at his age, if he still wants to climb in and do it. No doubt he's going to go into the Boxing Hall of Fame with all of those champions, all of them belts he won, you know, stuff like that. He's destined for the Hall of Fame. I just hope and pray at his age, he keeps climbing in with them young bingo taggers like that, that he don't get seriously hurt, you know, with the age
right.
factor. So, but hats off to him that he's willing to do it. But, you know, the pay-per-view king without second to none is Money Mayweather. Do they knock him off that throne, man? Money Mayweather's the guy.
And we talked about the heavyweights a little bit, too, last week on ESPN. The Pulev-Dinu fight, that actually came in with 469,000 average, which actually came out like that's the lowest-rated ESPN top-ranked show that they've had since. And, you know, we talked last week, Pulev had a big fight. He looked good. He had a good, you know, knockout, I think, fifth round. But we say, okay, here's the guy making his move. Well, then he went and grabbed a female reporter and kissed her and all this stuff, and now he's being investigated. It basically went back to Russia with his tail between his legs, because Gloria Allred, if anybody would know that name from California, she's a high-powered lawyer who defends women's rights. She's a tiger. You were talking about Bengal tigers.
You want to talk about Big Ben and undisputed. When he heard off that name, he took off to Russia, and he made a statement that the young lady made, she wanted more or something, you know, a statement way from Russia.
Yeah.
You know, he's out of the U.S., but my God, they're heavy on his tail. And no, with that high-powered lawyer, she might get a subpoena or something to get him extradited back into the United States. You never know with all this Russian stuff going on. On the brighter side of things, Bob, Klitschko said that no thanks, Dante Wilder. He said he wants to fight. He's going to come out of retirement, to my understanding. And that he's training, but he said Wilder no. I think he wants to go right back at it with either Tyson Fury or them on the Anthony Joshua on the topper, and the guys that beat him try to do that. And at 43 years old, he's been a champion a long time. I think he soul-searched a little bit. You know, it's rough to be out of the ring. And I think his spirit is renewed. And to see him return back into the heavyweight level and to do this, brother, I think is magnificent for the heavyweight division. And guess what? Our man who ran to Russia, he's the number one IBF contender. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and actually, you're right about that. Yeah. And also, Usyk was named the WBO mandatory for Joshua this week, too. So,
of course.
They've thrown some names in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Usyk said that he was going to relinquish his
the WBA title this week.
His crown as being undisputed, you know, cruiserweight champion. He's releasing that he's moving up the heavyweight. So with Usyk coming up there, I mean, there's a lot of good bright names coming up in there. But, you know, some of the old-timers are announcing that they want to come back and do this thing.
Oh, yeah, very few people get to that. Yeah, but there's also with Usyk, Eddie Hearn was saying this week, Carlos Takam, maybe the 17th or the 25th of May to get Usyk back in there. So that might be the first guy he's going to meet as a heavyweight. But, yeah, speaking of older fighters coming back out of retirement, yeah, we talked about this over the past. 47-year-old Shannon Briggs applied for a British boxing license this week. So we'll see. We still might get that Shannon Briggs-Tyson Fury fight we'll call him for before. Klitschko versus Briggs, man. I don't know. Well, that's great, too.
Why not? Two old guys is coming back. He wants to tune up. He goes and puts it in. You know what I mean? Boom, 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 boom. He's there. Bang. He makes a hit. Why not, Bob? But, you know, with all of that jiggling and stuff like that, you know, our man Eddie Hearns, you know, he said, look, he Deontay Wilder, if he don't do this thing in this coming year, is that he has to wait. You know, after this fight, if Anthony Joshua is able to get past Miller, he already has fights booked up. But, you know, an interesting thing happened. You know, Eddie Hearns was talking about Deontay Wilder's mandatory and they wouldn't be able to do that or Anthony Joshua's mandatory. Our great WBC president said that for a unification fight, and he has always made this statement, that for a unification fight, you know, you just leave the mandatories out of the way and let the big undisputed fights happen. And he stuck to his gun. So, you know, there's a little bit of jiggling, a little bit of snaggling, you know, with Wilder and them about these mandatories when the organization, I think the WBA had followed suit with that. You know, let the big unification bout happen. You know, the only one that's sticking, you know, being hardball is the IBF. But I think the IBF president, they know when something's big and it's huge, is that they let it happen.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, all of these things are good things. But Bob, once that heavyweights division, and we have our guests holding on the queue, if they hold, we'll bring them in a little bit here. But, you know, when this heavyweight division is getting going like it is now, that means money for the rest of the division. And we're talking about money and amateur sports. Let me tell you, in Russia offered $16 billion to keep boxing into the Olympics, you know, because they had talked getting rid of boxing in the Olympics. And also, this is for the 2020, you know, game. So, you know, before we introduce our guest here, talking about the Olympics, my name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions and our radio aficionado, world famous, taking on this magic carpet ride around the world. We bring in our special guest, this young lady who's shocking the world with the talent that she got down there in Louisiana. We had talked about this in Louisiana, Candace Wells, and our main guy down there in the Bayou State, Bo Williford. Welcome to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
How are you guys?
Hello? Bo?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, we're here.
Hello.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. How you doing? Is Candace there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Hello? Okay. You got to speak up because we can't hear you, champ. We can't hear you. Okay.
Oh,
tell
sorry.
Us a little bit. Champ. You're doing good. Hey, Bo, before we get started, tell us a little bit about Candace.
Candace is came to us about 2 years ago. had a little bit of boxing training, but not much. And we worked with her, especially Deirdre Gogarty worked with her very well. And she's a natural athlete, and she just picked up on everything nearly right away. And she had her first fight was for the novice championship in the state Golden Gloves. It was her first fight, and she won. And then she just kept on winning. She's lost one fight to a girl that had about 50 fights when she had about four. And so she and that was a flip your coin fight. You know, it was so close. But she just gets better every day, and she works hard. Got a great personality, and she's pretty, and she just kind of lights up the gym when she comes in. And she and Dietrich get along like wonderfully.
Well, she has somebody special as a special trainer, Deidre. When she was fighting, she was something special. And with you there, we know, you know, as y'all are grooming her, taking her up the line. But this thing, this big thing to win the Golden Gloves down there in Louisiana, and that tournament is tough. And Candace, how do you feel being champ now, Golden Gloves champ?
Oh,
welcome
my
to
goodness.
The show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I feel great. I mean, I've got a good team behind me, so really it kind of hats off for them for taking the time teaching me. So, but no, it's like I still have to kind of pinch myself sometimes.
So you're moving on, you know, towards is some of your goals. We just talked about the boxing staying in the Olympic Games in 2020 over there in Japan. Are they some of your goals to be an Olympic champion?
Yeah, at first I really didn't know what my goal was. I was like, I just want to box. This is so fun. And then once I got into Bo's gym and they started telling me kind of how it works, I'm like, why couldn't I do that? And the coolest thing is I'm 31 years old, so I'm kind of getting into the game a little late, just a little bit. But I'm like, how cool of a story would that be? You know, full-time professional turns and goes to boxing and then winds up at the Olympics at 31, 32. Like, to me, that just seems like a cool little story to tell. But with Deidre and Bo in my corner, I think that'd be that's a pretty doable goal.
No, yeah, without a doubt, Bo and Deidre, they can make it happen. But, Bob, you got any questions for her?
Yeah. Hey, Candace, how are you? Good. Congratulations
good.
Again on that, too. Good.
Oh,
and what
you,
else do you have? Do you have any ambitions? Yeah. Just wonder, do you have, like, pro ambitions then after the Olympics happen or whatever like that? What are your long-term goals?
I told Deidre the other day. Yeah, no, I told Deidre the other day, I was like, I definitely want one professional fight, Deidre, one. She goes, one? Candace, you get one, you're not going to be able to stop. Somebody's going to have to make you stop. And I was like, I got to get one. She's like, oh, honey, that's just scratching the surface there. So I definitely want to turn pro for sure. Because, I mean, to me, like, I'm actually a strength coach at UL here in Lafayette, and I work with women's basketball and soccer. And I push them to kind of push the envelope and set high goals. And they're like, what's your goals, Candace? I'm like, this little 19-year-old is asking me what my goal is. I was like, I want to be pro one day. So it's kind of funny. Like, I'm coaching them, but they're coaching me.
Hey, but let me tell you what. One thing about Bo, he's a pro guy. You know, he loves the amateurs. He loves the development. But when you're ready to go pro, you got the pro man right there, and he can move and shake you right into those. Bo can, with the magic that Bo can do, he probably can get you a title fight in your first fight after being a good amateur champion. What do you think about that, Bo?
I think Bo could probably call somebody tomorrow.
I think you're full of it, Aaron.
No, I'm for real. If Bo feels you're ready for a title shot, Bo can make it happen.
Hey, and if Bo couldn't, I'm sure he could call somebody that could get it done because he knows everybody.
Oh, well, Bo Williford's the man. But, hey, look, you know, you're getting ready to go into this one of the regional tournaments. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I go
on Friday. When is that? And talk to us. Yeah, on Friday. Wow. Talk to us about the tournament you're getting ready to enter. You're entering.
So it's the regionals. It's up for it's regional Golden Gloves. It's up in Little Rock, Arkansas. So weigh-ins are on Friday. And so far, I mean, I've been told this is what Bo's saying. I got to fight. on Friday. So I'm pretty excited about that. And then if I win on Friday, if there's more than obviously two of us that weigh in, then I'll turn around and fight again on Saturday. But that'll be the first time I've ever had two back-to-back fights. So I'm kind of excited to see how that goes, because I'm watching the Western qualifiers right now, and some of these girls are having three fights in 3 days. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Right.
So I'm pretty excited about that challenge.
Yeah, as a matter of fact,
well,
my niece.
Go ahead.
My niece just won the she won on Thursday and Friday, right, Candace?
She did.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely did.
She did an amazing
job.
Yeah, Jill Stafford, she's my niece. And
mm-hmm.
she boxes out of San Diego. She lives in San Diego, graduated from San Diego State a couple years ago. And she beautiful, absolutely gorgeous girl, about 5'9", 5'8", 5'9", 150 pounds, and she can fight.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
No, it's funny.
And by the way,
in the same weight class.
Yeah, she and Jill are in the same weight class.
Wow, that's a beautiful thing, man. You know, when you're young in this stage of the game in the amateurs, you keep winning. You see how beautiful the sport is on the high level. You know, sometimes getting started is a little kind of rough, but on the top end, it's a beautiful thing, and it carries you on to other things in life you want to do once you're finished. So what's it like being a strength and condition coach for a university? Are you the big tough girl on the campus or what? Or big tough person on the campus or what? I know one thing, you can keep them big tackles and football players in line. You chin check them.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so I've been doing this since I was 19. This is actually the first school that I've been to that I haven't worked with football. So really, it's one of the football strength coaches that got me into boxing. He did a few amateur fights. He kind of brought his guy in that would come after every practice, and they would kind of do mitts. He's like, Candace, you want to jump in? I'm like, well, of course I want to jump in. So really, it's the football strength coach that got me kind of started with the boxing. But it's kind of neat because, I mean, boxing is such a physical sport, but the one thing that's driving me crazy is I've been working every sport you could think of, but boxing is such a complex thing. It still got me like, oh, my God, how do you train for this? Your body, like, you get 3 minutes on and 30 seconds off. Like, this makes no sense to me. So it's definitely been a challenge in that aspect, but it gives me a little street cred with the guys. They're like, oh, you box? Oh, better stay out of her way. So I just use it as street cred for me.
let me as a trainer drop something on to you as you're a sports trainer. I'm going to talk the higher science of sports training to you. You know, boxing is a complex procedure. It starts with coordination, and your eyes are the link in the system. Your eyes send a message to the brain. The brain tells the muscle how fast or how slow to react or contract that muscle, and that happens simultaneously. And then practice improves that split second timing. And in training, you're always working on your loading your fast twitch fiber and your slow twitch fiber, one for speed, the other one endurance. And then after you're doing that, you're working on your ATP system. You know, you understand what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir. Actually,
the
I have
same.
A master's degree in that.
You got a master's degree in exercise physiology, right?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you said?
It's still
all right, then
yes,
you
sir.
Understand. You understand what I'm talking about. So, in training, each different components help you load different systems. Endurance is for your cardiovascular system. You have to go into your heart. When you go into your heart helps produce the oxygen, so that's what running, the Stairmasters, the light cycles for repeated motion. So, you know, you apply those sciences into boxing, and boxing has those science already incorporated in the speed bag, the heavy bag, sparring. Sparring is the sport-specific training that you look at. And then that's utilized for how you're going to compete in competition. You can't practice slow and be fast. You have to practice fast to be in fast in competition because of your fast twitch and five slow twitch fiber for speed and endurance. And if you don't practice the way that you're going to compete, if you practice slow and then you compete fast, you're going to burn out. It's just the same as any sport. So, yeah, Candace, you understand, and Bo knows the jabs and the left hooks in the right hand, how to stick and move, how to slug when you need to slug, counter when you need to counter. So you got an excellent team, and you have a champion in Deidre Gogarty.
Yes, sir. Like, I agree with that 100%. Oh, my goodness. Deidre actually sat down with me the other day. I'm like, Deidre, I'm a planner, like, completely. I got to see this on a calendar. So we sat down and we programmed out every single day and down to every single punch that we were doing Monday through Sunday that'll lead me up to the fight on Friday. So she's done a great job of setting that up and getting me ready. So I'm pretty excited
about
that.
Well, that's good. In closing, Candace, because we got some other guests waiting on, but what would you like to say in closing? Bo, you hang on because I want to talk to you about some other things. In closing, what do you want to say?
Basically, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate this, and I'm excited to kind of show everybody what's going on Friday. And the biggest thing is I just want to say thanks for Deidre and Bo giving me a shot because I just walked in one day, and then, you know, between them and a couple other guys that we have at the gym and my sparring partners, like, I'm going to be ready to go on Friday. So I appreciate you having me on the show.
Well, God bless you. You got a great team, and you have great knowledge, and that's what teamwork makes the dream work. And we'll talk to you later, champ. You go and win that tournament. Come back on the show after you won. Thanks for coming on the World Boxing Review Radio Show. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Bo, well, look, we want to talk to you. You know, we have our historian hanging in the queue, but there's some great the World Boxing Series down there in Louisiana. Can you talk to us about those fights that are happening down there in Raging Cajun land?
Yeah, the Kerry Daigle has been very, you know, Kerry has been very interesting.
Yeah, we and Kerry worked closely together a long time.
Right. The World Boxing
Keep
Super
punching,
Series
baby.
To,
keep
to
punching.
Lafayette. Yeah, keep punching. That's it. But anyhow, he was able to convince Sourland and all the other guys in the World Super Series of Boxing. And it's the Cajun Dome is a great venue. I mean, an absolutely magnificent venue. We did the National Golden Gloves there in 2017. And it's a great setup. The town is all excited about it. And Lafayette has been the home of the state Golden Gloves since the 50s. And it's a boxing town, and there never have been any real big fights professionally, but now they're coming here. And a few years ago, for 1980, I guess it was, we almost brought Ed Too Tall Jones here to fight a local guy, and what was Ed's manager's name? I can't remember his name now, but I know as well as I know my own name.
If you remember when Dana Pitcher and Kerry Daigle and us, when we came down there and we were doing fights, remember that? When we were doing the first MMA and boxing bouts down there. If you remember, all of us worked together in doing it. But in Lafayette, when we were at the, what was his name? Bobby Acorn, was it? That Kerry had?
Bobby Oakland.
Oakland. I worked with him. Down Louisiana. You're right.
By the way, about names, her name is Candace Walls, W-A-L-L-S.
Walls.
Not Wells.
Oh, okay. Walls.
Yeah.
Walls, okay.
And her boyfriend, fiance, his name is Klaus. I can't remember his last name, but he's a strength and conditioning coach at Auburn University.
Right. Wow!
Yeah.
Wow! Yeah. Well, you got a heck of a team, with you, Bo, you know, those WBA fights and that thing and that Super Series tournament, man. Good luck to everybody down there, Bo. And we'd like to thank you for bringing Candace on the show and yourself, man. Any questions, Bob?
No, we're ready. No, we're good. Thanks, Bo. Always good having you on.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you for tuning in to World Boxing Review. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And Bob, our radio aficionado, taking people on a magic carpet ride in our boxing history, Henry Hascop, man. Welcome to the show, Henry, and congratulations on the New Jersey 2019 inductee class, man. And, you know, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Aaron. You know, it's a pleasure being on. I was just listening to the two guests. I mean, you know, women boxing, you know, it's come a really a long way in the last several years. And, you know, in the beginning, you know, when we used to watch it on TV, you know, it was like almost like a cat fight. I mean, you know, they just do a lot of slapping. But now, I mean, they're really, you know, they can be in there with some guys. I mean, it's a pretty, you know, it's a booming sport right now for women. Like I said, in the beginning, I don't think I was really for it, you know, two ladies getting in the ring. But now it's more, you know, they have a lot more skill than they used to. And I give that credit to trainers like yourself and the gentleman that was just talking. I mean, you know, they they took these females to a new place, and now, you know, they're having, you know, main event fights on even show HBO. Last fight they had, you know, the main event was a lady bout. So, you know, that's how far they came.
Yeah, Bob, talk about that.
Yeah, listen,
about that, Bob. Talk a little bit about the big main bout.
We want to tell everybody out there, too, that coming up on April 13th, I'm going to be in Atlantic City to cover the Clarissa Shields-Christina Hama fight, which we've been talking about almost since we first came on the air. We were talking about an historic event, the unification, middleweight unification bout. And this is the topper, live on Showtime. But are you going to be down there, Henry? Am I going to get to see you in Atlantic City in a couple of weeks?
I don't know. You know, the thing is that my grandson has baseball games now. And, you know, they crowd me into being one of the coaches. So, I mean, it's every Saturday.
I know, you're coaching the home run king.
Oh, man. Well, that's not the one. Yeah, that's another grandson. I got so many grandkids.
How many grandchildren you got, Henry?
I have 20 grandkids.
Wow.
The thing is, I tell my wife, I says, I'm afraid to answer the phone anymore. No, not another one, you know. But they either keep you young or they're going to kill us, you know. I mean, you know, especially the one that lives upstairs from me. The one that lives upstairs from me is only 7 years old. And, you know, he wants me to...
Is that the one working out with you with the weights and all that, Henry?
Yeah,
he's
only seven. And today he comes down with a tie, and he wants to know how to tie a tie. So for the last half hour before I got on this show, I was showing him how to tie a tie, and he finally got it. I just hope he don't hang himself, you know. he told his mother, he says, you know who my best friend is? He says, oh, he says, Papa. he's my best friend. And I said, oh, boy. You know, so it's a good thing. You know, it's a good thing. Keep active, with your kids and everything. But
But I watched this class going in, man. You announced the new class. Just talk a little.
Well, I'm
going to
announce it this week
before you get in.
You know, we do have Jamil McCline. He's probably the big one going in. You know, and a few other ones. You know, I can give you a rundown later on that.
The heavyweight, but y'all announced the class though.
Good. We're going to announce it this week. I did put it out to quite a few people, you know, that's going in, and, you know, they'll come around, and, you know, I mean, we have a, you know, it'll be our 50th anniversary, You know, I've been in induction since 1968. Actually, that was when it was founded in 68. We start inducted people in 1969. So we've been around for quite a long time, and, you know, we try to put in, you know, people that, you know, then contribute to boxing, not only boxers, but trainers like yourself, you know, mm-hmm. Managers, you know, cut men, you know, and guys that, you know, people mm-hmm. have forgotten about them. And this is what the State Hall of Fames are all about. You know, give them that one last day in the limelight and, you know, have their family in front of them. And, you know, it's pretty cool, you know. But
yeah, it's
but
a beautiful
today,
event. When I went in last year, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate it when I went in. It was something. It's a nice, the dinner's fantastic. As I said before, that food don't never stop coming. When Henry told me that.
I experienced it,
let me tell you, that food don't never stop coming. And
yeah, well, my wife always
said,
you know, the cocktail hour is the best with the hors d'oeuvres going around. You know, they got lamb chops and all kind of fishes and meats and all kind of stuff. And she said, didn't you enjoy it? And I said, you know, I'm so busy, I don't even have nothing, you know. You know,
yeah.
So I said, don't even talk about it to me. You know, I said, I don't want to hear it. it's a good thing, you know, and Hall of Fame does a lot of good things. So do the other rings, you know, like raising the money for Rocky Lockridge's funeral. And,
mm-hmm.
within 24 hours, we raised the whole amount to pay for the whole funeral. And, you know, that was because of the boxing fraternity in the state of New Jersey and outside, you know, like the IBF, the ABC, and WBC
mm-hmm.
got, you know, things like that. So, you know, we're all a family, and we all try to work together.
Oh, well, that's beautiful. But, Henry, today you're going to be talking about boxing on the theater stage and, you know, all of that with the heavyweight champion. Talk a little bit about theater. A lot of people, you know, boxing got a lot of drama in it, man. I think, you know, it's a perfect fit for the theater and the stage and boxing. Talk about that, Bob. I mean, Henry.
Yeah. Well, actually, the theater boxing first started when boxing first started. Actually, boxing started in the 1600s. There was some fights, you know, we looked up and, you know, but there wasn't really the way boxing should be. But a guy by the name of James Figg, he was in 1719. He was the first mm-hmm. recognized England boxing champion. And, you know, England was the only one that was having fights at the time, so he was actually the world champion. And, you know,
right.
he was expert in swords and bare-knuckle fighting and also stick
mm-hmm.
fighting. You know, and, you know, he put on a display, you know, second to none. But, you know, very few people could see it because it was down on the ground and everything. So they invented this amphitheater where the stage,
mm-hmm.
you know, had a stage with a ring. It was, you know, made out of, you know, it was called the Figg's Amphitheater. And it was a raised platform surrounding by railings so the combatants would have a proper stage to exhibit their skills, because the grandstands,
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody says, oh, why don't you have grandstands? The grandstands didn't come about until over 100 years later in 1824.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're somebody like Mickey Rooney and you're standing in the back of a Bob Murray, you're not going to see nothing, you know. So the thing is that, you know, if you raise it up, you know, you could see, you know, what's going on, you know, and, you know, in fairs and everything like this. And Figg used to sit there almost all day challenging anyone, you know, to a fight. And, you know, he's said to had 270 fights, and he won every one but one. And the guy that beat him was Nat Sutton. And he beat Sutton
mm-hmm.
twice in return matches. And the last fight he had, they had to do all three combatants. They had to do the sword first. And the first blood, you know, if you drew blood
mm-hmm.
from your opponent, you won. Then the next one was
right.
sticks. And then the next one was with the fisticuffs. Of course, back then, it wasn't the boxing we see today. I mean, you know, it was more or less, it was even more gruesome than MMA.
Shadow
boxing. I mean, yeah, it was it was everything goes. Eye gouging, hair pulling. That's why Fig actually shaved his head so he couldn't pull his hair. I mean, you know, everything went. But even the next two champions, they had these amphitheaters, and they kept on, you know, displaying their skills throughout all England. Now, there's another segment on theater boxing where boxers became actors, you know. The first fighter to become an actor was a guy by the name of Nonpareil Jack Randall. He was the lightweight champion of England back in the early 1800s. And he went into theater, you know, and thing was, you know, they had no TV or no radio back then. So theater was one of the biggest biggest things you can have. So he would stand up in front of, you know, hundreds of people at a theater and tell of his stories of his fights. He only had 17 fights. He won 16. The other fight ended in a draw. And he was pretty good at that time. You know, he was a, you know, so-called English champion. Of course, you know, John L. Sullivan took it to another level. You know, he wasn't a very good talker or anything like this, you know, in front of the big crowds and everything. But the thing is, everybody wanted to see John L. Sullivan. I mean, who don't want to see John L. Sullivan? So he made a big splash in front of, you know, a lot of people. And the first real actor that was a fighter was James J. Corbett. I mean, he was in, you know, vaudeville. You know, he was in stage, you know, acting, you know, the real actors. But there was other actors, too, that Peter Jackson. You know, he was on the stage, and so was Jack Dempsey and Jack Johnson and Gene Tooney and Max Baer. And, you know, and then you come up to the, you know, modern era, you know, you had Muhammad Ali. He was on the
That's
stage.
Correct.
Michael Bent and Jake LaMotta. He had a one-man show. You know, if you ever watched the picture Raging Bull, you know, you could see he was a stand-up comedian. You know, talking about, you know, I fought Sugar Robinson so many times. I wonder I don't have sugar diabetes, you know, stuff like this. You know, he, and, of course, Muhammad Ali, you know, did the thing. And, you know, like Michael Bent, I seen him at the Kid Shamrock. That was with actually a story about Bobby Cassidy Sr. And of course, you know, latest is Mike Tyson. You know, he had that one-man show. You know, he stood up there for more than an hour talking about, you know, his whole career, which was hilarious. You know, the only thing was a lot of curse words and everything. But, you know, so I wanted to take some kids there. And then when I seen the show, I said, oh, well, you know, I can't do that. You know, I wish I had a PG version of that, you know, because it was very interesting. It was, and it was very funny. But then, of course, you had the theater. When, you know, I guess you remember, and Bob remembers, when you used to stand outside a movie theater waiting to get in to have a closed-circuit TV, you know, from all over the world. Mm-hmm. Actually, that started, you know, way back in 1939, you know, in England.
Mm-hmm.
They had a fight. It was a closed-circuit TV. Then it came to the United States in 1941. When Billy Sose fought Ken Overland for the middleweight title. But then it just expanded there. I mean, Joe Louis was fighting on, you know, on these closed-circuit TVs. And they even had the first drive-in theater fight. And that was Jersey Joe Walcott against Rocky Marciano, but not the first fight. They picked the second fight. And that didn't even last one round. So, you know, so I don't think that went over too big. You know, if it was the first fight, I think that would have been spectacular. But then, you know, you had the bigger fights. I remember going to Passaic or Hackensack or Patterson and going to these movie theaters and watching these fights. And it was really great because, you know, you had the boxing fans there and they were, you know, it was almost like being at the fight. He had this big screen, and, you know, he had the roar of the crowd, and people used to just line up outside, you know, waiting to get in, let's say, to Fabian and Patterson, you know, and, you know, places all over the country to see these big, big fights. And, you know, then, of course, when pay-per-view came in, you know, with the home box and, you know, HBO, Showtime and all these other things, that kind of, you know, put a debauch on that satellite, you know, TV. But, you know, that's basically, you know, the big, big story about, you know, theater boxing.
Well, yeah, but Ali thought James Earl Ray in the that stage play that they did, The Great White Hope, how to box.
Oh, yeah.
On
oh,
the
yeah,
theater
yeah.
stage.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. You know, there was a lot of, like, James Earl Jones. I mean, he played it on a stage
yeah,
and he
yeah,
played
James
it in
Earl
movies.
James. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's I love that guy's voice, you know. You know, he really
yeah,
came out. Of course, Jack Johnson didn't talk that way, but you know, the thing was, you know, it was a great thing. You know, like I said, years ago, you know, theater was huge because that was the only really entertainment, you know, they had besides maybe boxing, and you know, let's say back in the 1800s, you know, stuff like that. I mean, there was no baseball games or football games or anything like this, so you know, theater was one of the top, you know, pleasures that somebody can go to and see. And you know, if somebody like John L. Sullivan's talking about his career, you know, it's pretty, you know, just saying John L. Sullivan, you know, that's pretty nice to say you were there, you know, to listen to this legend, you know. So it's,
yeah, but
you know,
talk about Jack Johnson, really, where he really took to the theater stage when he was in exile over in France, when he started carrying the cigar tipperillos and the Tam hats when he was doing the theater plays. He did quite a few big theater plays over in France.
Oh, yeah.
And
it
really took off.
You know, the first real actor, you know, that was really an actor was Corbett. But then, like I said, Johnson was up there also. You know, he like you said, he did a lot of stuff in France. And Jack Dempsey, I think that's what killed really Jack Dempsey as far as fighting goes, because 1923 he had a fight against Firpo, and then he didn't fight again for 3 years. He became an actor on the stage. You know, I even have pictures of him putting, you know, makeup on his eyebrows and stuff like this, and you know it's
but Corbett did, he did the same type of things though. He put a lot of makeup on
they had
the,
to do
the
that
pictures,
you know,
that we had but he wasn't a long reigning champion though, was he?
No well, you know, you say a long reigning champion, they didn't fight that much, you know. You know, he won the title against Sullivan in 1892, and he lost it against Fritz Simmons 5 years later, but he only defended it like once or twice. I mean, you know, so he really didn't fight, you know. You know, so not like today, you know. Well, you know, today they fight a couple times a year also, but, you know, it's there was quite a few actors. Like I said, there was, you know, you can go back, you know, even in, you know, like Rocky Graziano. You know, he was on television many, many times. You know, if you look at On the Waterfront, I mean, you know, you had Tony Galento, you had Tammy Mariella, you had Charlie Norcus playing in that movie. So that, you know.
All right, Henry, we got 30 seconds. Close up for us, man. You're doing a great job with this here. Close for us.
Well, in a way, I wish there was theater boxing again, you know, that we go to a closed circuit TV. Of course, it's more comfortable sitting at home and watching the TV, but the excitement of the crowd, you know, you can't get that at home. You know, you can invite you know, quite a few people out, but you know, you just don't get that same crowd.
We need it back in the theater. Thank you. In closing, my name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champion. And our radio aficionado Bob Murray took us on a magic carpet ride again around the world, brother. Thank you, Bob. And our boxing historian, Hall of Famer, Henry Hascop. Tune in. Same time, same place. The World Boxing Review Radio Show. Thank y'all.
Real.